So what I'm going to talk about today would be some recent attempts in constructing the supersymmetric standard model and some SUSY gut models from string theory. This is going to be based on this is going to be based on some work in collaboration with Miriam Svetich and Ango Uranga. There's also some work in progress, also with Paul Langecker, on understanding the phenomenological implications of this class of models. But I don't think I would have much time to talk about that. Well, since Luis has already given a very comprehensive discussion of brain-world models, so today I think I will focus more on the supersymmetric aspects of it and hopefully giving you a different perspective. So, an outstanding question in string theory is, of course, whether at low energies it can reproduce the success of the standard model. Well, even for those of you who firmly believe that this is the case, one can still ask the question in what way standard model arises. So, from that point of view, compactifications that give rise to a string vacuum with four supercharges or less are particularly interesting because of the possibility of finding chiral fermions in the low energy spectrum. So for over a decade, the only game in town is the weakly coupled hydraulic string. And indeed, one can find many, many semi-realistic models which resemble quite well the standard model in low energy. And we also understand quite well the phenomenology of this class of models, what kind of things we would expect in the low energy. And of course, if this is the whole story, we won't have this workshop. So, first of all, type 1 string theory is back in town, which is due largely to the observation of Joe that D-brains and Orientifolds play a very crucial role in theories of open strings. On the other hand, the strongly coupled limit of the hydraulic strings seems to be in better control. We could get chiral fermions by compactifying M theory on manifolds with boundaries. Well, it has been recently realized that there is yet another way of getting chiral theories, by compactifying M theory on certain manifolds with G2 holonomy. So it seems worthwhile to explore other new calculable regimes in M theory and see to what extent we can get a model that looks like a standard model, whether we can learn some new interesting physics from these other corners of M-theory. So in this talk, I will focus on the Orientifold approach, and I will present to you some new chiral supersymmetric theories, their Orientifold models, by introducing D-brains and angles. Because the setup that we are considering involve D6 brains and O6 planes, so there's also some interesting connections with the recent interest in obtaining chiral theories from compactifying M-theory on certain G2 holonomy, manifolds with G2 holonomy. And I will discuss the connection only towards the end of the talk. So, well, as Luis discussed yesterday, there are two simple ways of getting chiral theories from brains. One way is to put D-brains on singularities. So one could imagine starting from a type 2 string theory, compactifying on a torus, and then dividing up the theory by a combination of a well-shaped parity symmetry and some discrete symmetries. And if the discrete symmetry is a subgroup of SU3, the low-energy theory has n equals 1 supersymmetries. Now, the discrete symmetries emit certain fixed points, and chiral theories now arise when you put D-brains at that fixed point because the discrete symmetry distinguish fermions with different chirality. So one could imagine the chiral theories that live on the brains could contain the standard model. But what one typically finds using this approach are models of the Patisse-Lame type with an SU4 cross SU2 cross SU2 gauge symmetry, where the standard model fields are collected into bifundamental representations of the Patisse-Lame gauge group. This is not a surprising fact because in the theory of open string, at least in the perturbative level, we don't expect states with quantum numbers which are charged under more than two non-abelian gauge groups. There are also some efforts in trying to get some grand unified theory models using this approach, but in the low energy, that doesn't seem to be the Edron-Higgs field that is often used in the grand unified models to break the gut symmetry down to the standard model. So it seems like a conventional gut or a standard model seems to be harder to come by using this approach. And if you don't want to break up, to give up supersymmetries, there are some variations of this type of model building by turning on some background field, which has the effects of reducing the rank of the gauge group. But the end result doesn't change too much. We still don't get quite close to the standard model.
But, you know, even these models, the Dirac-Lex symmetry,
yes,
didn't have all kinds of phenomenological problems. Or do you really have a standard left-right symmetric three-family model?
There are problems in trying to break the Patel-Salam gauge group down to the standard model. So you do have the structure of a left-right symmetric models, but you might not have the right Higgs field to do the job.
Because you start with SU4 color, and that's the troublesome.
Right. So there are Higgs fields that can do, that can break the Patel-Salam gauge group down to the standard model. They apply fundamental fields also under the Patel-Salam gauge group, but to preserve supersymmetry, you cannot arbitrarily give that to the scalar field. So, at least in the supersymmetric limit, you don't reproduce the usual minimal supersymmetric standard model. So, another way of getting chiral models from brains is to consider brains and angles. In that case, the chiral fermions are localized at the brain intersections. But this, Luis has described in his talk yesterday some of the non-supersymmetric brain well models constructed using this approach. In those models, supersymmetry is broken at the strength scale. So there are some uncancelled NS tetral that would potentially require a restabilization of the vacuum. In any event, the dynamics involved in these non-supersymmetric models are harder to understand. So we will focus on models that have supersymmetry with n plus 1 supersymmetry at the strength scale. So our goal is to look at brain configurations involving B brains at angles that preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry. So to be concrete, I will only discuss one model where the orbifold group is a C2 plus C2. The generalization of this to other orbifold group would be rather straightforward. Well, one of the reasons why we focus on this model is because if the brains are parallel to some orientable planes, as was discussed in this paper, the model does not give rise to chiral fermions. So that would be a good starting point to see what can we do to the orientables in order to get chiral theories out of it. So, well, there are two C2 generators of this orbifold group. And if we take the six-dimensional space, which the type 2 string theory is compacted by on, there'll be a product of two-dimensional toroid. The two C2 generators act as a reflection on two of the toroid. the supersymmetry is broken to n equals 1 by the orientable projection, which acts on space-time as a reflection along the complex plane. So, as a result, there are four different types of orientable planes. There are orientable six planes. Four of the dimensions of the orientable planes are the non-compact space-time, and they are common to all types of orientable planes. The remaining three dimensions of the orientable planes are wrapped around different three cycles of the internal space. So the different types of orientables differ in what cycles they are wrapping around. Now, in the vacuum, in order to respect the orientable symmetries, the D brains have to come along with their orientable image under the various orientable planes. So, the orientable planes carry Ramon-Ramon charge, negative Ramon-Ramon charge, and the type of Ramon-Ramon charge that they carry depends on the three cycles that the orientable planes are wrapping around. So in the transparency that I've just shown you, this four different type of orientable planes carry this type of orientable charge. They are characterized by the homology class of the three cycles. And A and B cycles here refer to the two non-contractible cycles of the torus. Well, once we compactify the theory, the Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the orientable planes have to be cancelled by something else. This is just Gauss's law. And without any additional source, this Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the orientable planes can be cancelled by an appropriate number of D-brains. And we'll consider D-brains that are wrapped around three cycles. And the type of three cycles that we chose for the D6 brains to wrap around are going to be factorizable. Namely, the three cycles will be product of one cycle in each of the T2. So the Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the D-brains will be specified by the wrapping numbers of the D-brains. So for instance, a D-brain of this type have the following wrapping numbers. It wraps around the A cycle twice. It wraps around the B cycles only once. Mm-hmm. So
AIBI
are
the generators of homology
groups
of each of the three T2s?
Yeah, so these are the A cycle, B cycle. So instance, this guy wraps around the A cycle, B cycle once in each of in the second T2, so that's why it has wrapping number 1, comma 1. Similarly for the third one. But in the orientables, there are also images under the orientable planes. So in addition to the type of D6 brains that I just shown you, the orientable planes map this set of D6 brains to the orientable image, which wrap around their cycles differently. So in order for the tadpoles to cancel, the total Ramon-Ramon charge carried by the orientable planes should be canceled by the D brains and the orientable image. So this put a constraint on the number of D-brains that you can introduce and the type of three cycles that they can wrap around.
Is the D6 plane charge always in this product form, or you can always
write it as a sum? It's always writable as a sum for the orientable plane. But for the D-brains, it's not necessarily the case. I'll come to it in a moment. So far, we haven't imposed supersymmetry yet. The type of three cycles that respect the same supersymmetries as the orientable plane itself will be type of three cycles that are related to the orientable plane by an SU3 rotation. So whether the model is supersymmetric or not depends on the wrapping numbers that the brains are wrapping around, as well as the compact structure moduli, which describe the size, which describe the shape of the toroid, whether the toroid is big, is fat, or as short, or tall and thinning. Controlled by this compact structure moduli chi I. So this is the type of three cycles that I've just described, but there are other type of three cycles that are not factorizable. But the simple way to see it is to consider three cycles that intersect. Given two three cycles that intersect, they can be recombined into a new cycle. So D6 brain wrap around these two different cycles can be recombined into a new set of D6 brains wrapping around these cycles, as long as the homology class of this process is conserved. So, and this process is triggered by the bifundamental scalar field, which are localized at the intersection points. So this bifundamental scalar field corresponds to a flat direction, so supersymmetry is conserved during this process. But so given two cycles that are factorizable, the combined cycles in general is not a factorizable cycle. But in this case, the condition on supersymmetry is much more involved. It requires that at each point on the D6 planes, the tangent 3 plane is related to the orientable plane by some SU3 rotation. So for simplicity, I will only consider the type of three cycles that are factorizable. Factorizable means can be written as products of one cycle. So non-factorizable cycle means the cycle depends on the location in the other tori. Right. So it's not a simple direct product. So, so far for the details, and once you specify the brain configuration satisfying all the constraints on cancellation of Ramon-Ramon charge and supersymmetry, it's rather straightforward to work out the spectrum of what are the chiral matters that live at the on the brains. The gauge bosons always comes from strings ending on the same set of D brains. And for a set of D brains that are not on top of the oriental planes, the gauge group is UN. But the two orbital symmetries break it further down to UN over 2. In addition to the gauge bosons, there are also some adjoint matters that are localized, that are corresponding to open strings ending on the same brains. There are also some chiral matter coming from strings stretched between brains that intersect, and they transform into bifundamental representation of the gauge group. The number of the of such states depends on how many times the brains intersect. And similarly, you do find bifundamental matters coming from strings ending on brains and the oriental image. And finally, there are certain numbers of symmetric or anti-symmetric representations coming from strings stretched between the brains and its own oriental image. It all can be calculated from the intersections. So, with all this, we now can see whether we can engineer a standard model within this setup. So supposing that the standard model comes at the intersection of an SU3 brain with an SU2 brain, the number of chiral families is given by the sum of the intersection numbers between this set of brains and the intersection numbers between the SU3 brain and the oriental image of the SU2. The reason why is there are two contributions is because the fundamental representation of SU2 is pseudo-real. So whether it's fundamental or anti-fundamental really doesn't matter. But actually, to be precise, we do get a U2 gauge symmetry rather than an SU2 from a stack of brains. So this matters coming from AB sector and the AB prime sector from the oriental image carry different U1 charge. So this U1 charge cannot be part of the hypercharge. So, right. So there are certain tori that respect the oriental symmetry. And actually, there are two discrete choices. For rectangular tori, it does respect the oriental symmetry. It maps the tori back to itself. But in that case, the number of families is always even because of the symmetry between the brains and the oriental image. There is another discrete choice corresponds to a tori which is tilted. And this tori, under the oriental symmetry, the A cycle is no longer invariant. It's mapped to some other cycle. So because of that, there's no longer symmetry between the brains and the oriental image, the wrapping numbers. And so there's a possibility of getting an odd number of families from there. So, it's interesting that by demanding an odd number of generations, the number of D brains in the vacuum is reduced. The reason is that there are fewer oriental planes when the tori is tilted. So in terms of the tadpoles, the D brains that are sensitive to this type of oriental planes will be reduced by a factor of 2. This is certainly good news because a common feature of a string model is that there are a lot of gauge symmetries other than the standard model. by reducing the rank of the gauge group, there's a possibility of getting just the minimal standard model. So to simplify the search for supersymmetric solutions, we consider D brains that are rotated in only 2 of the complex plane instead of 3. But even with this simplification, the angle between 2 stacks of brains in general is an SU3 rotation as long as they are rotating in different complex plane. So for instance, if the SU3 brains corresponds to this stack of brains, which are rotating the first and the third tori, and SU2 brain corresponds to this stack of brains, which are rotating the second and third, the angle between these two stack of brains is an SU3 rotation. So in fact, you can calculate how many times these brains intersect. The SU3 brain intersect with the SU2 brain once, and the SU3 with the oriental image intersect twice. So these intersections have chiral matters transforming in fundamental representation under the SU3 and SU2. So the quark doublets are localized at this intersection point. So, but actually, instead of 6D brains, which instead of having 6D brains in the stacks, giving you an SU3 symmetry, we have 8D brains lying there. Two of the D brains are going to be moved away from the other three. Corresponds to the field theory breaking of the U4 down to U3 plus U1. The reason why we are doing that is, as we will see later, it will be easier for us to identify what is the hypercharge in this model. So, but the SU3 brain and the SU2 brains by themselves don't cancel the tadpoles. So, in the model, there are some additional brains, which we call the filler brains, just to cancel the tadpoles. And the filler brains are parallel to some oriental planes. So if they're all on top of the oriental planes, the gauge symmetry is an SP gauge symmetry. And you can consider moving the brains away from the oriental planes corresponding to breaking that SP gauge symmetry down to U1. So this is the chiral spectrum of the model.
So those were not all the brains you need in this model. You have more brains, don't you?
Yeah, I have more brains. I think one is enough. But these are all the brains. So this is the SP that I just showed you. These are the SU2, SU3 brains. And there's some other filler brains. They give you some additional SP gauge symmetry. And it's clear in the table that there's some additional non-abelian gauge group coming from these filler brains. So, this is the chiral spectrum, and with obvious notations. There are many U1 gauge fields in the models, some of them coming from the overall motion of the brains, some of them coming from the breaking of a non-abelian gauge group down to U1s. So, for those U1s which are anomalous, they cannot be the hypercharge. But there is one combination of the U1s which is non-anomalous and give the right hypercharge assignment. The reason why it's non-anomalous is because this U1 actually comes from a breaking of a non-abelian gauge group. So the masslessness of this U1 gauge field is guaranteed by non-abelian gauge symmetry. So the hypercharge has two pieces. One of them comes from the breaking of the SU4 down to SU3, and that U1 gauge field is the B minus L. The other piece of the U1 comes from the breaking of the SP group symmetry, and it essentially plays a role of a right hand isospin. So,
sorry, how many non-anomalous
U1
you have
up here? Non-anomalous, I think three. Yeah, one of them is a hypercharge. So, the quark singlets comes from the intersections of the SU3 brains with some filler brains, and the Higgs fields come from the intersection of the SU2 with some filler brains. And in addition to the standard model fields, there are also some additional exotic chiral multiplets carrying unconventional hypercharge. So this model is not fully realistic, but it does share some features that we expect from the standard model. And I believe this is the first construction from Oriental of a supersymmetric three-family model with the standard model as part of the gauge structure. So, What about guts? One of the difficulty that one encounters in constructing a gut model from strings is that it's difficult sometimes to get the adjoint Higgs field that is often needed in breaking the gut symmetry to the standard model. But in these constructions with intersecting brains, we do get adjoint Higgs field coming from strings ending on the same brains. So, for instance, if you have an SU5 model, the matrix multiplets contain the 10 representation and the 5 bar representation. The 5 bar representation can come from the intersection of the U5 brains with some filler brains, and the 10 can come from the intersections of the brains with its own oriented for image. So, in order to get a non-zero number of anti-symmetric representation, we need the brains to intersect with its own oriented for image, and that requires rotating the brains in all three angles. So, as an illustration, we can consider an example with two different type of cycles that the brains are wrapping around. One of them is just the filler brains, so it gives you an SP gauge symmetry. The other one contains the U5 and the U3. This comes from the breaking of a U8 symmetry to begin. So the model is a four-family model, SU5 model with some additional gauge symmetries. So I have to say that both of these models that I present don't look too realistic, but it's conceivable that there are some variations of that that could eliminate some of the problems that I mentioned. So in the SU5 case, the four generations come from the intersections of the brains four times. And to break the gut symmetry, by turning on the adjoint Higgs field, that corresponds to splitting the brains. And the hypercharge in these models just works the same way as a conventional gut. So
that joint is a model, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You do also get a joint in your case, but in your case, supersymmetry is broken, so it's considerable.
No, I mean, because of running, you lose the nice joint and coupling constant, you have not the video.
That's right. So let's see what are the generic features one can learn from these examples. What are the generic phenomenological features of models coming from intersecting brains? Well, first of all, the gauge coupling unification is not guaranteed, because the gauge couplings depends on the volume of the cycles that the brains are wrapping around, unless all the standard model gauge would come from brains wrapping around cycles that have the same area. This fact is not guaranteed. But in the gut model, however, the unification is guaranteed simply because the brains are wrapping around parallel but identical cycles. Well, it's also interesting to compare the situation with the gut symmetry breaking in the heterotic string. In perturbative heterotic string, one can show on very general grounds that an adjoint Higgs field is incompatible with n equals 1 supersymmetry and chiral fermions unless the gauge symmetry is realized at a higher Moody level. Here we do get adjoint Higgs field, but in a sense we are doing a higher level construction because we are breaking the SU5 coming from the U5 brains and its orientable image to a diagonal group. So, Well, as we have seen in the standard-like model, the hypercharge is a combination of many different U1 gauge fields. So the gauge coupling for the U1 hypercharge is in general a function of the volume of the many different cycles that the brains are wrapping around. So in terms of the weak mixing angle, one can compute it, given that we know the area of the cycles, and this number can be expressed in terms of the complex structure moduli eventually. But in the model that I have just described, the complex structure modulus is not fixed by supersymmetry. So one can imagine there's a whole family of supersymmetric vector with continuously varying sine square theta. This is again in contrast to the perturbative heterotic string, where one can have a very predictive statement on what's the value of the sine square theta. You can only take certain discrete values. Well, larger extra dimensions. The brains configurations involve SU3, SU2 brains intersecting in many different ways. So there's no dimension in this model that is transverse to all the standard model brains. So we cannot make the dimensions very large because the experimental bounds on the calyxocline modes of the standard model put a very tight constraints on the size of extra dimensions.
Can you explain why you say the neurotic has a
It's a conformal field theory argument, and the value of the sine field theory depends on the Woody algorithm.
It's for 0 to generic.
It was shown by. We can discuss it later on. It's not a very crucial point, but I just want to compare the story with the hypnotic string and see what kind of things you can see. But and
you
other
get corrections anyway, you get threshold corrections which are independent anyhow of one loop. And in some way, this is related with the fact that in type 1 or in identical models, you already get at the tree level different gate coupling constants. It's not unrelated.
Right. So perhaps So perhaps some of the loop effects are seen in the tree level effects in type 1. For instance, the FI term is one example. In any case, as Luis discussed yesterday, there's a natural hierarchy in the Yokawa couplings because the quarks, the leptons, and the Higgs fields are located at different intersection points. And the couplings come from Wellsheet instanton effects, so they're suppressed exponentially by the area of the Wellsheet stretch between these intersection points, measured in string units. That in turn might put a constraint on the size of the extra dimensions, because in order for the Yokawa couplings not to be exponentially small, the area of this well sheet, which is typically the compactification size, cannot be much larger than the string scale. So, proton stability.
You will show us an effective superpotential.
For what? For
the standard model.
That's what they're trying to determine. It's calculable.
It's calculable.
You have to calculate all the intersections and all the areas and ambiguities with the splitting of brains,
We don't have an answer yet.
But how do you know that this adjoint is a monolith?
You're talking about the flat.
Oh.
Yeah. I was referring to the standard model.
Well, in that case, by calculating the couplings, we mean calculating the precise number. But we can argue from symmetries what kind of couplings are allowed. And in the case of adjoint, we can compute the couplings. And it has the potential of the form. So these are the three adjoint fields. Super potential of that form. So if you just turn back an expectation value of the one.
Because we have three adjoints.
So these three adjoint couple in this precise way. And it's not an n equals 4 structure. So.
And still there is a modulus, right?
Yeah, so you can give that to one of the fields, it's still a flat direction.
Another question about the super potential.
Yes.
You have couplings of the type 10, 5 bar, 5 bar, of dimension 4, which violates Marion number. Dimension 4,
say again.
Violating couplings.
10, 5 bar, 5 bar.
Those typically achieve. It's typical to
avoid. Right, in the gut model, yes. But in the standard model, there's a way to deal with it. And I'm going to describe the standard model case. In fact, you can see where the argument breaks down here. Why the standard model works, but the gut model doesn't work. So the argument why proton stability might be softened by the proton stability, but the proton may not be that unstable, is you can analyze the type of couplings that are needed in order to induce proton decay. So in order for proton decay to proceed, there must be an effective operator involving three quarks and no net three incoming quarks and no net outgoing ones, right? So that corresponds to having a string amplitude with the insertion of three vertex operators associated with the quarks. And if the quarks comes from bifundamental fields, an insertion of odd numbers of vertices, this amplitude actually vanishes. And this is a statement actually true for not just at a perturbative level, but for this statement is actually true to all this in perturbation theory, including multiple loops and handles. The argument doesn't hold if there's a non-perturbative effects, and non-perturbative effects could allow couplings of that type, but the effects is usually small. There's another way why this argument may not work. For instance, the right-handed quarks may not come from an bifundamental fields, it can come from an anti-symmetric representation. So in that case, couplings of that type are allowed. So in a gut model, some of the right-handed quarks actually come from the anti-symmetric representation rather than a bifundamental field. So there's no simple argument why photon decay, photon is stable. And generically, they're there. So this is related to a question that Gia asked yesterday about the Fayette AL plus term. So the model is supersymmetric for some special values of for some brain configurations where the angle is an SU3 rotation. So the angle that the brains are rotated is dependent on the compact structure moduli. And on general grounds, we expect the compact structure moduli to couple to the U1 gauge fields. And so you expect in the low energy and effective, you expect the low energy a term of this form. Basically, the sum of the angles times the gauge field. So, and the D term of this type is also expected from the string constructions, because when you start looking at a supersymmetric solution and rotate the brains away from a supersymmetric vacuum, the fermions stay massless, but the bosons will pick up mass. This is what you expect from the D-time supersymmetric breaking as well. So for a certain type of angles, the system is unstable because they are tachyons. And for other types of angles, supersymmetry is broken, but the system is stable. The mass square is still positive. So the difference is in the type 1 case, this D term comes from a tree level rather than a loop effect.
Would you mind using the pointer from here?
Okay. All right. So so having a non-zero D term means that the vacuum has to be restabilized. And in the brain picture, the restabilization is achieved by combining brains wrapped around different cycles. So for instance, take the guts example, take the grand unified theory as an example. If the angles is positive, then the field coming from string stretch between the brains and filler brains is tachyonic. So it can get a VAF, which trigger the combination of the D brains corresponding to the U5 and the filler brains. But if the angle is negative, it's actually the anti-symmetric representations which has to get a VAF in order to restabilize the vacuum. And in that, and if it does get a VAF, it will trigger the combination of the U5 brains and its own orientable image. So there's something that I probably I don't want to go into detail, but you can see the small instanton transitions in this context as an effect of combining brains wrapping around different cycles. You do find examples such that the number of generation changes simply because the gauge group before and after the transition is different. So let me now discuss briefly the connection of this orientable constructions with the recent work on understanding how chiral theories arise from compactifying M theory on 7 manifolds of G2 holonomy. Well, such constructions are interesting because in the low energy, that would give rise to a four-dimensional theory of n equals 1 supersymmetries. But not all n equals 1 supersymmetric vacuum from M theory corresponds with G2 compactifications, because there could be additional sources such as the membranes and G-flux. If the 7 manifold itself is smooth,
is that the first statement that people that even basically G2 holonomy spaces with complicated enough singularities could account?
What about spaces with boundary?
Yeah.
So in that case, you do turn out G-flux. In that case, you do have G-flux, you have sources from membranes, etc. So the G2 case corresponds to cases where you only give source to the gravity and not to anything else. So
except the singularities. Except the singularities, right?
You do have singularities. Right?
Yeah, they are. It's where chirality comes from.
I'm going to discuss that. So, if the 7 manifold itself is smooth, the low energy contains, in addition to n equals supergravity, only certain Ewan gauge fields and some neutral chiral multiplets. So, they are not relatively not very interesting from getting standard model physics out of it. But you do get chiral fermions and non abelian gauge symmetries by compactifying M theory on manifolds on G2 manifolds that are singular. And certain isolated conical singularities of G2 manifolds have been studied from many different points of view. So let's see if we can understand some of these nice results in a simple oriental setup. So the key is that these six brains, unlike other brains, when lived to M theory corresponds to pure geometry. In fact, a set of these six brains, when lived to M theory corresponds to multi-centered top-net space. And similarly, the oriented full six planes is special. It, when it lived to M theory, it corresponds to a Tihanovichian manifold. So this is a system, when you live it to M theory, corresponds to a purely geometrical background. And from the number of supersymmetries, we expect that this should correspond to compactify M theory on certain singular G2 manifolds. So the non-abelian gauge symmetries from the brain system comes from string stretch between brains that are coincide. When two D6 brains are on top of one another, you get non-abelian gauge symmetries. In the M theory setup, this should correspond to M2 brains wrapping around two cycles that have vanishing area. So now, if the Ramon-Ramon charge of the D6 brains are locally cancelled, the M theory circle is constant over the base. For instance, when an appropriate number of D6 brains are placed on top of an O6 plane, the M-theory circle is constant. And in that case, the 7 manifold can be written as a product of the 6 of the base and the M-theory circle modeled out by a C2. But the model has been studied in the literature, and it doesn't contain chiral fermions. So, but from the intersecting brain picture, it's not too hard to identify what kind of singularities one would expect in order to get chiral fermions. So, so the D6 brains are wrapping around supersymmetric cycles, as we have seen. So this corresponds in M theory to certain ADE singularities that are supported on the 3 manifold. The 3 manifold is essentially a supersymmetric cycle, except at certain points where the other brains are intersecting. And we see the chiral fermions are supported at physical dimension 7 singularities. So to be more precise, we can take N D6 brains. When it lives to M theory corresponds to some A type of singularities. Now, at the intersection points of n d6 brains with another stack of d6 brains, at the intersection point, the fiber is more singular.
Can I make sure I understand this? So in M theory, there are, of course, no brains left.
There are no brains.
There are no brains left, but you have you have a family and singularities over some. I guess it's an associative cycle, which is a three cycle, and there's another associative cycle with a family and singularities over it. And you're saying the two three cycles should intersect at a point.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. In that case, of course, the cycles are easy to visualize. They're just toroidal cycles.
Yeah.
Right. So at the points in which the D-brains intersect, the fiber is more singular than at other generic points. And one can work out the spectrum that is localized at the brain intersections, much in the way that was done in geometrical engineering of certain Calabi-Yau singularities. So the idea is to start from a singularity, from a higher singularity, and deform the singularity to a lower singularity. And the metafield, to work out the contents of the metafield, we just have to decompose the adjoint representation under the singularity. We have to decompose the adjoint representation of the gauge group associated with the higher singularity to that with the lower singularity. So for D6 brains, we intersect with another D6 brains. We expect five fundamental fields coming from decomposing the adjoint. So by unfolding the higher singularity to that of a lower one, we get five fundamental fields.
How do you see it's n plus m, not m times n plus?
Pardon me?
How do you see it's n plus m rather than m times m? Why is the intersection of two singularities, say n and m, is n plus m?
Well, it's obvious from the brain charge. So you have n units of D brain charge and m unit of D brain charge. The total charge carried by
the
D brain.
A n singularity is if we divide by Zn, Zn plus 1. So we divide by Zn plus 1.
So n D brains give you an A n minus 1 singularity.
Right.
Right, so now you put more
so
D brain charge
in the system. Minus one singularity is C2 mod Zm.
Yes.
And A m minus 1 is C2 mod Zm.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say on the intersection I have to factorize by both Zn and Zm. Would it give Zn plus m or Zn times m?
I couldn't hear you.
Okay, maybe we should discuss.
Okay, but I thought from the D-brain picture it's clear that the singularity is A n plus m.
You know, if you put n brains on top of m brains, right, you get A n plus n minus 1, right? So the way you're trying to do this, right, unfolding is viewing them parallel and then taking them apart. So I think it would be hard to talk about products. You
know, just
almost totally parallel. You can't end up
with
it
as you put
A n
plus
m.
Yes.
I have a question. It's only strange from a GQ perspective. At this intersection, you're going to get, I guess, n m matter or n m bar or something.
Yes.
And a priori, it would be anomalous. Mm. And in type 2 string theory, there will be some tadpole conditions that tell you that at the end, you have an anomalous spectrum. From the G2 perspective, why couldn't you just make some hideous space with the right sets of singularities intersecting to make an anomalous spectrum? Is there some sum rule on G2 manifolds and their singularities?
If there's a tadpole condition for G2, then there would be a case, right? So the point is how to glue the singularities together.
Yeah, there must be some rule about which singularities can occur in a compact manifold. That's strange.
I guess basically that. So in the string theory, there's some block anomalies cancelled by some inflow coming from the box. So in G2, is an anomalous inflow is the budget.
But once you compact
it, basically, when you compact it, there should be some global consistency to this anomaly inflow picture where the inflow from one intersection is
cancelled.
So there's a
topological obstruction.
There should be a geometrical condition of some sort.
So when you build a compact one, there should be some topological integral inverse. So you can do together only singularities which are not anomalies.
So even if you do an oriented pool construction, if you forget about global issues, you have fewer constraints. So this is the same situation here, except we don't know the corresponding typo conditions in G2. So we spoke about the bifundamental fields, but what about the anti-symmetric representation of SU5? The anti-symmetric representations comes from the intersections of the U5 brains with its own orientable image. So at the points at which the U5 brains and its own orientable image intersect, they also pass through the O planes. So the singularity at the intersection is actually a D-type singularities. So by decomposing the by unfolding the D-type of singularities down to an A-type of singularities, we do expect an anti-symmetric representation from the adjoint of SO10. So in the brain picture, it's also quite clear that this type of singularities can be resolved simply by giving back to scalar field charge in the different brains. And in the M theory, that would correspond to resolving the co-dimension 7 singularities. And so one can obtain a non-chiral theory starting from a chiral theory. But this is also understandable because the fermions that are chiral with respect to the original gauge group may not be chiral with respect to the one after the combination. So it can be understood purely as a Higgs effect. So let me just summarize. I have presented some supersymmetric orientables, some new supersymmetric orientables by allowing deep brains at angles. And there are some generic features of this class of models. There are chiral fermions at the intersections, repeating number of generations, and the hierarchy in the Yukawa couplings. And I used a standard model and a grand unified model as an example to illustrate that some of the phenomenological features of this type of intersecting brains could be very different from a perturbative approach of the heterotic string. And I just briefly discussed the connection with G2 manifolds. And this is basically what Shami is asking, whether there would be a global consistency conditions for G2 compactifications. It would be nice to find an analog of a tadpole conditions in that case. And it would also be interesting to consider orientable with fluxes. And Shami will tell you more about that tomorrow. And basically, the fluxes would induce a potential that would help stabilize some of the moduli. And at the same time, it has the benefits of taking care of some of the tadpoles. So you don't need to have that many brains in a vacuum. And hopefully, one will be able to find something that is closer and closer to the standard model. So I'll just stop here.
General question about these G2 monopoles.
Okay.
So you're imagining some singular monopole of G2 velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are the singularities all of a sort of conical nature where the curvature doesn't blow up as you approach the point? Or the curvature typically blow up when you approach the singular point?
They seem to be just at the point.
Yeah.
They're usually singular just at a point.
So it's a curvature delta function?
Yeah. I thought you're not considering singularities which are flybird over a three manifold, but have. I thought you had basically had ALE singularities, flybird over a three manifold. So
yes.
They're all three manifolds with singularities.
But that's okay, but the point is that the curvature is not. They're locally quotients of smooth spaces.
Yeah.
Okay. If one was actually talking about singularities where the curvature blew up,
mm-hmm.
then I was going to ask how we could say anything because quantum gravity. We don't know much about the quantum gravity corrections in M theory, I thought. So
mm-hmm.
one would imagine it. But if it's all quotients of smooth spaces, then I guess.
But things like conifolds have been discussed in M theory, which are not quotients of smooth spaces.
And how do they get away with that?
Holomorphy, I suppose, right? who's done this? I think that they sort of have a conifolds, and sometimes in a regime where the geometry is large and smooth, but you know, just by sort of larger field theories or symmetry, you can extend to the regime where you're approaching the singularity.
Or you could start from string theory, turn up a couple.
Or that, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
My it's also kind of general questions. So, say you choose to consider, say, I mean, you are looking for this guy, a series with Cairo Canyons, but let's say, you know, you would construct a CUV without, you know, this condition, and it would be, say, non-chiral in a sense, but, you know, it would be a CUV where, I mean, you have non-chiral CUV at short distance, but, you know, mass of fermions are split, and effectively at low energies, you could have, you know, analog of chiral CUV, but of course, you would have extra you know, partners, you know, somewhere else, right? So I wonder whether, you know, this kind of more generic scenario you would consider would lead to kind of intermediate CV where you could have kind of imitate chiral CV, I mean, in phenological sense, having different scales for your meta field. And phenologically, those CV would be the same way acceptable as, you know, as chiral CVs, right? But I'm not sure what would be, you know, this.
Well, we're taking a more conservative approach that at the string scales, it looks like a chiral model with three dimensions. So.
No, but it could be kind of intermediate in the sense that, say, symmetric case, right? And it's some case which is kind of symmetric at short distance, but, you know, phenologically still asymmetric because, you have a kind of vector-like theory at short distance, but it could be, you know, still consistent with phenology if masses are different.
But how can you do that? Because these are chiral LSU2.
Chiral LSU2 could be only appear at low energies, below the scale of, you know, these patterns, right?
But then it's chiral, period.
No.
Yeah.
Theory could be vector like.
No, under SU2, the chirality that we're worried usually is under SU2 cross U1, not under some other group which can be broken at any scale. So the problem is to get chirality under SU2 cross U1. But you know that by introducing extra stuff, you cannot push their masses above the SU2 breaking scale because they are chiral under SU2 symmetry.
But it means that this masses, other masses would be kind of your, you know, effective parameter in your...
No, because they're tied to this weak electrode breaking. Because they're if you have space with your chiral and the SU2 cross U1, they can only get their masses once you break SU2 cross U1.
So you can introduce partners which make your chiral multiples non-chiral, no. You know, starting from somewhere.
No, of course not, because their masses cannot be above the breaking scale, right?
No, but it would be the breaking scale, if you like.
Yeah, at the breaking scale, sure.
It's a breaking scale.
But right? Then we have seen already, there's nothing there.
But this scale could be still below thing scale, right? So you have kind of hierarchy of scale, right? So you have your thing scale, and you're constructing theory, and you can have hierarchy of scales, you know, and in this way have kind of...
But it should be at the weak scale, right? There is no room to play around with that, right?
Okay, I don't know. So I wonder if there is more possibilities than just, you know, a standard model, which you are going after.
Essentially, what he's asking is like having fourth generation.
Yeah, all partners. Okay, right. It could be like a fourth generation, but right. or you can say that just have extra heavy particles, right, which plays as a intermediate role.
But in that case, you have to understand the dynamics. You have to understand the symmetry breaking and all the dynamics, but if you have such an intermediate scale.
No, but in your approach, in some way, you choose to be, say, what you to be close to before. Let's say that it's not exactly what you fold, but you are choosing, kind of construction which is close to what you fold. So it's approximate to fold, but not exactly that. This one, then you would have hierarchy of scales, right?
No.
Depending, or you would there is no.
I don't think we have much, right? Freedom. This is like pure string construction, right?
I see. So
any
you
kind of additional hierarchies. I mean, you do get condition that string scale cannot be very low, you know, because from construction, I think you're not asking any of these dynamical issues. You know, any kind of additional scales would be related to some symmetry breaking factors, like supersymmetry breaking.
Look, I think that this statement has to do with string theory. We know that we cannot extend standard
as
model.
As far as chirals go, the only way, I mean, these exotics are generic play and we encounter them again here. Chiral exotics have reappeared again in this construction. They were there in the erotic generically, and they are here now. So indeed, as you're saying, this is, I would say, most serious problem of these models, because the only way you can give those guys mass is really at the TV scale.
Exactly, but breaking standard mode, because they're higher than the standard mode.
That's the real, unless
so there is really no vote here, and you cannot push their money above the standard mode of breaking.
So. Right, and so it's a generic play of, and this one.
Yeah, so is this when you do not have kind of intermediate scales?
No,
it would not.
I mean, to take it in different
configuration,
I mean, you would not have that
use.
Oh, because you have a possibility. So, for example, I mean, like, just a fantasy, but let's say that if I'm kind of close to singularity, but not exactly there, then I do have a parameter which gives another scale, right? You know, this distance, how far.
You're thinking of deforming this construction somehow, right? And somehow decoupling some state.
Yeah, right, but it could be approximate decoupling.
Impossible from,
I thought the Karo is respect to SU2 before you break SU2 list.
Yeah, I don't think you can in that sense. Maybe one should also be probably said that, you know, this God models, as we are looking at more carefully, may have all kinds of problems. One thing that you see right away is the joints, you know, on the brain always have the joints. So even breaking of the God down to the standard model will always give you, you know, triplets of SU2 inhibition, right? At least in this naive person. They are really troubling. It's exciting to see that you get this template and five bars, right? But then as you start looking more details,
it's also difficult to get the mass chunk for the gradient.
Right, maybe you should point this out, because I think it's fair to say, you know, that it sounds great at the beginning, but in details that's not good. But still, I think it's just the beginning, right, of they are. It's worth exploring this really more extensively and this part of it.
Can I ask a general question, which may or may not be fair at this point, but do you see what obvious advantages this approach has over new generations?
Depends on what you believe. Depends on what is the value of M string. So in the Hadronic approach, there's not much room in fiddling around with the string scale. So if the experiment really tells you that the string scale is TED or an intermediate scale, then you know that you're looking at the wrong lamppost if you have been looking at hadronic, really coupled hadronic string models.
Sure.
So one can make statements like that, you know, comparing the good features and bad features of different models. And hadronic perturbative level seems to be more predictive. You know, certain no-code theorem that one can make, there are certain things that you expect, like sign square theorem, etc. And in the deep brain approach, gauge coupling unification is sort of the window, unlike a hadronic string, where there's still a prediction of the value of gauge coupling.
But you know, to defend the stage unification, it's not totally out of the window, right? I mean, it's for one additional parameter, controllable modulus parameter to defend the thing.
I mean, in these brain world experiences, in many cases, the string scale could still be large, I mean, right?
Yeah.
Just a little. So, I mean, how much what we've heard really depends on the scale being small. I mean, the remembering of unification yesterday, for example. Does that require what would that require for the mass scale?
If you have a standard model, then each gauge coupling component is independent and depends on the random volume of each brain. So you something you adjust a posteriori. So SU3 is stronger than SU2 because the inverse volume of one and the other are the opposite way around. So there is a geometrical explanation for it, but it's not a unification explanation. Just a general comment. I don't know. I'm not sure one should insist in the standard procedure of SU5 or SL10 or unification or whatever, even in the string language or in the G2 language or whatever, because the problem is not, it always appears again, it's not double trigger splitting problem which people try to address with different mix. It's problem stability that's wrong. And double trigger splitting is just one fraction of the real problem, which is proton stability. You may forbid double trigger splitting, but then you have dimension four operator with PU right to proton decay. Dimension four operators, so you have to find a nice explanation for that. In terms of G2 or a heterotic, Calabi or whatever, it's going to be a very cumbersome and sophisticated
answer in terms of, it turns out that we have this and this and this and this discrete symmetries, with some sort of our decision. I think in the brain language is something simpler. In some way, Baryon number is gauged. Or so there's different way to, that's it. Or what you say, that it's just three quarks do not couple in the two quarks. And that's in fact, they do couple.
Right, and in addition, there's a UN Baryon number coming from the standard of SU free things as well. So before that symmetry is broken, that would have
But it's gauged, but is it broken or unbroken by the Baryon number?
Unbroken gauge
symmetry.
This is a particular
symmetry.
I thought it was broken by the
interpreter.
Or by not
your
leader.
It should be broken, right?
Better be.
That's what I was saying. Gauging Baryon number is good as far as
you don't break the
rating.
Okay, well, this is not
the same. It's a different model. In this case, the UN Baryon number is an exact symmetry. In some other model, the UN can be anomalous.
No, if you want to gauge, it should be broken, right? We see a term that I don't see Baryon for some random
thing. In some models, the Baryon number is broken white because it's already anomalous.
No, I understand, but once you break it, then the whole story about the side dimensional curves has come back, right?
And so it will be dependent on the breaking scale compared to the strength scale.
Yeah.
So
right.
If you can
find it. Right. If it's string scale, then it's the same story. If you don't have it,
you should have broken this one or two others and add it to the
one or two would be hard because it's proton decay. It's like,
just because you're stupid one, 192
Yeah, I don't know how numbers work, but I would imagine you really need very strong suppression, not just one or two, but you could below. Because it's a proton decay, it's very, which is very sensitive. But anyway, I don't know. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So tomorrow Shamit will speak at 1, so it's 1 hour earlier because they have a flight at 4:30.